to hit near the top of your order. You'd have him for 6 years. He'd play outfield. He'd probably hit 20 homers, 65 to 70 runs batted in a year, hit about 270. I mean, I think the Pirates would trade Mitch Keller for a player like that if available. So, Keller starting tonight makes me think he's not going to get traded. And Dan Zangrilli agreed with that earlier when he joined us. If Keller was really close to being dealt, you would scratch him for tonight's start because you're not in the playoff mix at all. So if you lose a game, who cares? And you need to protect Keller from getting hurt. Now, the odds of him getting injured aren't good, but if a trade's about to happen, it can get blown up if there's bad medical. And why risk it if you think a deal is on the precipice of happening? So here are some comments from Ben Cherington from just a little while ago on the trade deadline. He starts by saying that he wants to make some ballsy trades.
I don't think we can be risk averse. I don't think that's going to work in Pittsburgh. If we want to win, we're going to have to assume risk. And with risk comes downside to that, obviously. If it doesn't work out, we get criticized. That's okay. I don't think we can win without assuming that risk, though. Now, it's case by case, right? Like, we don't need to or will assume massive risk on every single decision. But yeah, we're going to have to be willing to assume risk, I believe, to win. And that risk can come in different forms. And sometimes that's going to come in the form of a player that we believe in that hasn't done anything in the big leagues yet. And until they do, there's no proof that they will.
Risky business, except instead of Tom Cruise in underwear trying to pick up hookers, it's Ben Cherington making lousy trades. He wants to take on risk. He is the last person in the world I would trust to do something risky, given his track record. How many definitively good trades do we have him down for, Donnie? You've got Rodolfo Castro for Bailey Falter. Can we even come up with a second one where we're like, yeah, that's good? Is there a second one?
I mean, with the way things currently look, you could probably argue that the Horowitz for Ortiz trade looks a lot better now than it did. But
by the way, how about another Guardians pitcher? This time, Emmanuel Class A was one of the best closers in baseball now, getting accused of the same stuff.
Yeah, they should have just blamed it all on their translator. But there are also two prospects in that deal, which
we got to see how those guys do.
Right, so you can't definitively nail
that
one down.
I don't know, man. I'm not going to go do cartwheels for Horowitz.
Well, I mean, the fact is Ortiz might never play again.
Yes, I agree with that. Okay, so that's a win. But did the Pirates get a lot better in that trade? Ortiz was a good middle-of-the-rotation starter for them, and Horowitz is a first baseman who hits for a decent average but hits for almost no power. Speaking of, that's Cherington starting off. Like, let's get crazy here. Let's go wild. Let's get willy-nilly. Let's get weird. At the trade deadline, he says in this next comment that trading a Keller or a Bednar and getting a proven big league hitter back is just not happening.
Well, if you're talking about like current proven, you know, everyday position player performers, especially if they're controllable past this year, price is very high, as you'd expect. Always depends a little bit on how much money they're making, and there's other factors in it, but the price for those players is going to be highest. And so we should be open to acquiring those players, but that's also a reason why, especially for us, I think that we need to be particularly ready, successful at acquiring the players who are not fully proven.
Right. We're not getting proven players back. We're going to have to get guys that are close to major league ready, and it's going to be on us to develop them and make them better, is what he's saying. Donnie, I don't trust him to do that. I don't trust him to trade Mitch Keller, who's a good major league pitcher, and you're telling me what you're expecting back is somebody that's maybe at AA and AAA, and the Pirates have to finish the developmental process with him? No way. They're going to blow that if it happens.
That's the thing. I don't really trust him with any major move, which is why I'm still very worried about Keller being the big name out there. Because if you look at his history of moving big pieces away,
it's awful.
As a seller, yeah, it's not good.
It's atrocious.
He has a couple of small victories with the Falter move, with the Horowitz move, like a couple of small victories there, but anytime it's
when
been...
When he's had to sell, whether in the offseason or the trade deadline with the Pirates, and he's had a big chip to play, he's effed it up royally. But, I mean, read the tea leaves here. Keller starting tonight makes me think he's not going to get traded. That's my pivot into or transition into David Bednar. Now, Zangrilli was in here earlier saying that Bednar was very emotional after the game Saturday, and he looked out at the skyline after the game at PNC Park, took some pictures after the game, and Dan connected the dots, and he said it felt to him like that was Bednar acknowledging or recognizing that that might be his last time pitching as a Pirate at PNC Park. Now, I'd also like to point out that it was his 100th save, so maybe he was doing all those things because he was proud of himself for turning his season around and his career around this year, and 100 saves is a big deal. Charrington here talking about Bednar. Now, I want you to listen to this clip, because I think you can tell from Charrington here which direction he's leaning in, keeping or trading David Bednar.
I'm not sure I can recall a single player who has been as strong on the field and off the field and happens to be from that city as David has been. Trifecta of those things is, and so much respect for him, for who he is, the performer on the field, the person off the field, the willingness to fight through adversity, which he has done here also not too recently. So I don't know what's going to happen. He's a really valuable pitcher, really, really important person. I think we should take that very seriously. Yeah, any conversations I have with him, I'll keep between him and I. Have a huge amount of respect for him.
Donnie, Charrington's an analytics guy, right? His background's in being a smart Ivy League educated guy or thereabouts who was taught how to run a front office by Theo Epstein in Boston, and he's one of these baseball savant nerds, high IQ guys who has run front offices in Boston and Pittsburgh. That's his background. You've watched Moneyball. Have you watched it as many times as Happy Gilmore? Is it on the list? Is it a multi-time viewing?
I've watched it multiple times. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's high as Gilmore.
I'm saying all this because these guys are supposed to be black and white, no emotion whatsoever. Charrington's saying that it's important, it's valuable, what Bednar is on and off the field, that has to be, he said that has to be taken into account. That sounds like something he's getting from the owner. Like, hearing that answer makes me think that Bob Nutting does not want Ben Charrington to trade David Bednar. And it would take Ben Charrington being extra, 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 extra careful, but also very, 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 very sure that what he gets back for Bednar is worth it, because if he makes another bad trade and it's the Pittsburgh guy that he ships out, well, he's really going to draw the ire of the guy who writes his checks, and maybe, depending on who you talk to, Charrington is either on thin ice or very close to it. So I infer from that answer that they would need to get blown away to trade Bednar. Here is Charrington saying what it would take ultimately to trade Charrington or Bednar.
Proven performance. You know, if we're going to be better in 2026, we need more of that, not less. So we would only contemplate giving up something that's seemingly more proven if we really believe that it gives us a better chance to be better by next year. We'll see how that goes.
If we're going to trade proven performers, we need to get something back that's going to make us better next year. I don't know. I think there's a for sale sign out on these guys, but he could very easily take it down if he's not blown away by an offer. The trade deadline's Thursday. Maybe it's all BS because GMs will do that sometime, but if I had to bet on this at the moment, I think both guys are on the team on Friday. How about you, Don? Bednar and Keller are on the team Thursday at 4:01 p.m. I think they're both still here.
Remember, it's 6 this year.
Oh, at 6:01 p.m., I think they're both on the team.
I'm leaning more yes on Keller, that he will be on the team. And I feel like I'm leaning no with Bednar. Keller, like, it's not that I don't see the
reasoning for trading him, because it makes sense. They've got a surplus of arms and they don't have any bats.
Yes, but I'm just petrified
Correct.
Of the guy that is in charge. If he had any sort of positive track record of pulling off big trades, then I would say go for it. Somebody's also going to want to overpay for one of the bullpen
pieces, I know, but I just think after hearing him talk, the owner has made it clear to him that he's got to get overwhelmed on a deal for Bednar. It just, why else would he bring up things like what David means, like off the field? Who cares about that? Would he make Moral Mulsey's good guy list, David Bednar? Probably. But you're not building a team of choir boys here. You're trying to win. It doesn't matter if they're from Mars or the actual planet of Mars. People love Neil Walker here because he was local, but those teams won. Bednar's gotten booed at PNC Park, for crying out loud.
We need to score more runs to win more games. That's clear, and that's a goal going into 2026. You know, we're still learning, and we can't force it. We've got to stay disciplined and not do something that we don't believe in just because it brings back a position player that might look a little bit better on the roster. In a lot of cases, we're going to be acquiring players who are not fully proven yet, who, you know, we believe can contribute. That's just as important part of this of getting better is really doing that really well, is acquiring those less proven players and bringing them into an environment where they can thrive and are getting better.
All right, so once again, Ben Cherington there talking about how they need to score more runs, but the guys they're going to bring in need seasoning. The Pirates need to sprinkle their own magic pixie dust on them. And I don't know how anybody could look at this regime and feel like they're capable of doing that. Name one hitter they've made better. Name one young hitter that's come through their organization. I guess they had to refine O'Neill Cruz. But O'Neill Cruz is still a very raw player. He has great moments like he did yesterday going from first base to home in about 9 seconds. Then he occasionally hits the ball 450 feet. But he doesn't look anywhere close to a finished product, and he's now in his late 20s, not his mid-20s. Who else? I think Nick Gonzalez is an okay hitter. Hayes is bad. Sawinski's batting average dipped under 100 yesterday. What the hell's happened to that guy? Henry Davis has been relegated to just personal catching Paul Skenes, which is the easiest job in America. That's like being Tiger Woods' caddy in the early 2000s. Congratulations, you're Paul Skenes' personal catcher. It's like being Peyton Manning's quarterback's coach. Waiting on John Parado. We'll see if he joins. Our boss, Craig Riley, was having fun with Grok before the show. He's into AI. And he's now doing deep dive Q&As with Grok about our shows, about what they think of us, what they think of Donnie, what they think of Mueller. How smart is artificial intelligence when it comes to describing and critiquing what we do. I also saw a thing on social media this weekend, where you could ask Grok, Twitter's AI, to tell you who the most famous person is who has visited your account. You could ask Grok, not who follows you, but hey, who is the most famous person who's at least looked at my Twitter feed? Did you do that, Donnie?
I did not, but I saw a bunch of that yesterday.
Well, you should do it now because it'll get back to you in less than 30 seconds. So my answer My answer was Russell Wilson. And at first I was like, oh man, like I was hoping for a bigger name. How about this? Russell Wilson has 5 million followers on Twitter. Tom Brady has 3. You're telling me that there's 2 million more people out there who find Russell Wilson more interesting and more followable than Tom Brady? Russell Wilson has more followers than Aaron Rodgers on Twitter.
I think it's because those two guys you just named, Rodgers and Brady, I know Brady for sure, had a later entrance into social media. Like I would be willing to bet that Wilson started his Twitter long ago and his team started his Twitter long ago.
March 2012 for
I don't think Brady Wilson had a Twitter until he retired.
2019 for Brady, so not quite retirement, but close. And then let's see Aaron Rodgers here. Aaron Rodgers is 2010. Rodgers has 4.4 million followers, and Russell Wilson is 5.4 million. He's got him beat by a million, man.
But again,
and he started later.
Wilson, not that the other guys don't have like a team of people, but you know Wilson does. And they just seem to put a massive emphasis on their social media.
I was hoping that I was going to get somebody who was outside of sports, who was like incredibly famous. I was very let down when I saw that Russell Wilson was the biggest name person on there. Because, let me see if this is still true. Well, here's one that you like, Donnie. And this guy has way more followers than Russell Wilson. John Cena follows me.
He actually follows a couple of people I know. I don't know.
He has 14.4 million followers, and he follows me for some weird reason.
Right. How many is he following? Like, he follows, I think, a good amount of people.
He follows 1 million people, so yeah. I should not feel special whatsoever.
Now, he doesn't follow me, so that's a feather in your cap. But, like, I have a buddy who is followed by John Cena.
What if you looked up who's the most famous person who, you know, I don't know if you actually did that, like I told you to. But like Grok spit back like an adult film star or something like that. Because, you know, they can have pretty big social media followings from what I heard. From what I've been told, yes.
Did Ken Carmen tell you that?
No. Well, he's told me some other things about that stuff, but I don't really want to talk about it right now. Yeah, all you do is say, like, find a thread where people were asking that question and then say to Grok, like, okay, how about me or something along those lines? And it'll tell you who the most, like, most followed person in the history of your account, who the most followed person is that's looked at your stuff. And I have a funny feeling it's going to come back Russell Wilson for you, too. Because of what you said, I feel like his team of people that run that account are so sensitive to what people are saying about him that they've probably seen you tweet something or just like given you the once over because of what you do. I'm telling you. I'd love for Mueller's to be like some, like, dignitary, like the Pope has looked at Mueller's account. Right? How many followers do you think the Pope has? Let's see here. Pope Leo.
Oh, he's got to have several million, right?
18.8 million. And he only had like 6,000 when he became Pope.
It pays to be the Pope,
that
brother.
That Pope bump. Dom DiTomaso, it says, followed him immediately.
Oh, Bechtold on that follow list, huh?
Lindbergh. Bechtold, yes.
Okay, I was going to say.
Yeah, Bechtold went there. Mm-hmm. Pat Narduzzi said, I got to follow me some Pope.
We get a lot of calls on that. It's clear to me that there's lots of things we can and will be able to do between now and Thursday. I think way more important is what are the things we actually want to do and believe in and believe fit into that goal of putting this team in a stronger position by next March.
All right, that's Ben Cherington. Teams want the Pirates pitching. Does he want to give it up? That's the question. Mitch Keller, David Bednar, to a lesser extent, Daniel Santana, the big chips the Pirates have to play here at the trade deadline, which is on Thursday. Ben Cherington sounded like David Bednar could stick around for sentimental reasons, referencing Bednar being from here and his work off the field when talking about Bednar yesterday. Dan Zangrilli made it sound like Bednar was doing things post-game that made Dan feel like Bednar was under the impression that he had pitched as a Pirate at PNC Park for the last time. Let's go out to the fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. That's where we find the very best. Pittsburgh's national baseball insider, John Parato, is back with us. John, do you think David Bednar is going to get traded?
It sure seems that way from people I hear around baseball that, you know, there's a lot of interested teams. A lot of teams could use a closer or a good setup man, and he certainly is having, you know, gotten back to his old form this year and pitching well. So, yeah, I think he's going to for a couple of reasons. One, there's going to be demand, and they might get something decent back for him. And two, is economical. You know, he's going to make $8 or $9 million as a third-year arbitration player next year. And most small market teams don't pay relievers that kind of money. And it's a tough call because he is such a fan favorite and he is such a great guy in the community. But I got the feeling he thinks he's gone. Like you mentioned Saturday night with Dan Zangrilli, really said I was part of that scrum too at the end of the game. And, usually he's not an emotional guy. He never gets too high or too low, but you could tell he was about to tear up talking about what it meant to get his 100th save and, you know, what could have been his last eight PNC Park appearance.
John, who are the interested teams in David Bednar that we know of?
Well, I know the Phillies, they've been after him for a while. The Texas Rangers certainly are interested. The Detroit Tigers, the Cubs, there's probably some other teams out there where, you know, they've kept it more quiet, but, you know, pretty much every team in contention is always looking to bolster their bullpen for the stretch run, especially in today's game where your starting pitchers only go five or six innings and relying on relievers more than ever. So I've got to believe there's a number of teams that are interested in him, and I know there also are with Dennis Santana as well, and even Caleb Ferguson, the left-hander. So the Pirates' bullpen could look a lot different by this time next week.
John, Mitch Keller is going to pitch tonight. The trade deadline's Thursday. Typically, if a team feels like a starting pitcher is on the verge of being traded, they scratch him before the deadline. We are talking about the Pirates. They don't always do things conventionally or the right way. So what do you read into that, Keller pitching tonight for the Pirates?
It can be one of two ways. And again, you know, it's hard to tell, and I don't think of a wishy-washy answer either one. You're going to showcase him, or I'm sure there'll be a lot of scouts there in San Francisco, just like there were a lot of scouts in Pittsburgh over the weekend watching the Pirates and the Diamondbacks. My feeling is I'm getting that they don't feel like they're forced to trade Keller. I mean, he's on three more years on his contract after this year at a reasonable price, even for a team like the Pirates. And I think if they don't get what they want from a team at the trade deadline, that they're just going to hang on to him and either build around him next year or see in the winter if they can get a bigger return when teams are more apt to give up more in the offseason. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sold that he's gone by Thursday night. I'm not.
I got sidetracked here, John, because I just have multiple people texting me saying that Charlie Hayes' dad in the last 20 minutes just tweeted out a very cryptic tweet that said everything happens for a reason. Key Bryan's probably most logical destination, New York with the Yankees. They traded for Colorado's Ryan McMahon. I mean, is there anybody who wants Key Bryan Hayes and is willing to take that contract on, John?
Well, and the scouts and front office people I've talked to, I don't think there's a whole lot of interest. And I think even though by most team standards, $36 million over 4 years after this year isn't much. The Pirates would love to get rid of that contract. It's clear that it's just not going to work out for you to keep Ryan here, especially as a hitter. I mean, he's a great defensive third baseman, but you got to be able to get more than two home runs two-thirds of the way into the season from your starting third baseman.
Right.
I think he's unhappy. He just seems like it. He rarely ever is in the clubhouse where we can talk to him before or after games. But I've been told by other people on the team that he's not happy here. And, he hasn't been for a while, and he's a change of scenery guy. But I will say this. Mm-hmm. If they don't pay part of the contract down, they're not really going to get anything of value, maybe a low-level prospect in low A ball or complex league or something like that. But this is going to be strictly salary relief if they do trade him.
John, back to Keller now that we got that Hayes thing out of the way from his dad. Bob Nightingale, who we have on the show, we respect the heck out of him, said that he heard the Cubs would trade their top hitting prospect, Casey. What's his first name, Don?
Owen.
Owen Casey for Mitch Keller. If that's true, why isn't Mitch Keller already in Chicago, John?
Well, I think the Pirates want a little bit more, and I think they're holding out, kind of playing poker with the Cubs here a little bit and, trying to see if they can get more than Owen Casey. I know they like Moises Ballesteros, who's a catcher, but first probably baseman. Going to end up in the outfield big, or first base.
Big kid. And, he's a wide load, that kid.
Yep. So I think they would like – I think they would need two prospects who are either ready for the majors now or very close to being ready. And I think they don't want to Keller up in a one-on-one for Casey, even though Casey is an intriguing prospect. You have a guy for three more years under contract. You got to try to extract as much as you can in any trade. And I know talking to scouts from other teams, they said that they know that they're going to have to pay up for Keller if he's traded. They're not going to be able to steal him because it's not a situation where the Pirates actively want to dump him. They want to use him to bring offensive talent back.
Pittsburgh's National Baseball Insider, John Parato, our guest. John, after Paul Skenes had another great start, he went on with Zangrilli on the postgame show, and Dan asked Paul straight up, are the Pirates close or far away from winning? And this is what Paul Skenes said.
Closer versus farther away, what's your sense as to where this team is at in that respect?
I would argue both to an extent, because we are very close, but we need to consciously and intentionally make moves to get us better. I think that's something that we might have been a victim of in the offseason a little bit, just because we have guys that can get better, on the pitching side and offensively. That seemed like that was the goal and the outlook during the offseason. Not that we made some moves, but there are guys that we have now that can get better, that will get better, but we have to make it happen. And then obviously going out there and, trading for guys, signing guys, who knows from there. But I think it's something that we have to be conscious and intentional about.
John, that's the first time I've heard him pretty much call out ownership and management for, hey, go get us more guys. And also what you did in the offseason wasn't good enough. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I hadn't heard that soundbite, but, yeah, I was impressed. Usually he plays everything down the middle and he's apolitical and doesn't say much of anything, really, to be quite honest. He's a nice guy, but, you talk to him and you think, wow, he gave me some good stuff. Then you go back and play the tape and said, well, he really didn't say anything of interest. But he certainly said some very strong things, some strong opinions in that interview with Dan. And I'm impressed by it. And I mean, you could kind of tell by the look on his face after he loses those games where he gives up one run in six innings or two runs in six innings. He's not happy with the fact that he's getting no run support, but he's also a good teammate. He's not going to, he's not going to talk down the offense throw somebody under the bus. But yeah, I'm sure he's frustrated. And I think a little bit of that in a controlled way came out in that answering that question.
Do you think it could spur the team to action knowing that Paul Skenes and his people expect the team to do more, John?
I would hope, and I thought it would last year, even without him saying anything. I thought we'd say, wow, we've got one of the top three pitchers in baseball, and we got him on a cheap contract. We can take that money that we would normally pay a pitcher of that caliber and spread it around and get a couple of impact bats. But they didn't do it. I mean, their biggest offseason acquisition was Spencer Horwitz, who has been playing well on this last homestand, but really otherwise hadn't done anything all year. And, you know, I just feel like they had a very underwhelming offseason, and that gives me no confidence that they'll have an overwhelming offseason this year, because they really haven't the entire time Ben Cherington's been here.
John, let's close on this. We have this story from Jeff Passan today that Bryce Harper and Rob Manfred were nose-to-nose in the clubhouse in Philly, and that Harper said something along the lines of, if this guy is here to talk to us about the implementation of a salary cap, he can get the bleep out of here. Is that how most players feel?
Yeah, the vast majority. I will say one thing about the baseball union, as opposed to especially the football union and even the NBA and the NHL to an extent. They're unified, and they always have been, I mean, since Marvin Miller's days in the late 60s when he first formed the MLBPA. You know, they're smart. They put money away, all their licensing money for last year and this year they put into a war chest so players will have at least some money coming in during a lockout, which will be more likely than a strike. But you never say never, but it would have to be a deal advantageous to the players for them to ever accept the salary cap.
And how would they make that advantageous for the players, John?
I think a salary floor would be one thing that might make the players raise their eyebrows enough to think about it.
Do you think the Pirates would go for that?
I don't think they would. I don't think Bob Nutting wants to be told you have to spend X amount of dollars every year. And I think he's not the only small market owner that feels that way. But the players feel that that's one way you can have more competitive balance. And, you know, we'll see. It's going to be an interesting negotiation. And, you know, they barely got it done in time to have a season a few years back. And
yep.
I don't know. I mean, it just seems like at some point part of that season is going to get lost when the contract runs out in before the 2027 season.
John, Donnie Football said today that he's seen Happy Gilmore more than 50 times. Is there a movie you have seen more than 50 times in your life?
I can't think. Well, how can I not know? I've watched it a million times. The holiday movie with Chevy Chase, where all the light, you know, he
Christmas Vacation.
Christmas Vacation. That's it. Yeah, I would say I've watched that one more than any movie I've watched. But I have to admit, part of it is my wife loves that movie, so that's why we watch it as much as we do.
There you go, John Parrotto. Thank you, John. Appreciate it, brother.
My pleasure, Pony. Thanks for having me, bud.
There you go.